Up North News with Pat Kreitlow is a product of Courier Newsroom and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Up North News with Pat Kreitlow starts now.
Well, here we are, and good morning. It's Tuesday, August 16th. Welcome to our little Wisconsin coffee break. I'm Pat Kreitlow, along with Luke Mathers. At 8:15, candidate for Congress Dick Ostman. At 9:15, candidate for State Senate Bob Look. And as always, we begin with a little bit of crossfire from Stevie Ray Vaughan, because that's how a lot of us feel, day by day, watching things fly back and forth all around us. Those of us who would just like a nice, peaceful life up here on the lake or wherever you are in the United States, but that is not the world in which we live right now. So people are going to be flinging stuff at us. We're going to fling it back, maybe put a little truth on it along the way. We were alerted to a missing persons case that caused a little consternation in Wisconsin yesterday. A Connecticut man, Tim Michaels, apparently went missing for a time. There were some Republican dinners and events over the weekend. It appears just about everybody attended these things except the person running for governor of Wisconsin. From the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel yesterday, members of Wisconsin's GOP party ticket spoke Sunday at the Republican Party of Dane County's Lincoln Reagan dinner. The man at the top was noticeably absent. Since winning the Republican gubernatorial primary on August 9th, Tim Michaels has made only one appearance at the Wisconsin State Fair. Over the weekend, Michaels' campaign staffers tweeted they were in Grant County, and they said they were in Seymour, and they said they'd gone from Kenosha to Janesville to Milwaukee, but Michaels himself was not there, and staff did not immediately answer questions about where Michaels had been. And so the story was put up. There was some speculation, much of it rooted on, you know, guy's got to go check on his mansion in Connecticut, or maybe his penthouse or a condo in New York City. Then lo and behold, just shortly after the Journal Sentinel published their story, Tim Michaels was found. He is alive and well, and he was going door to door in the Milwaukee area, something a candidate for governor does not normally do. So somehow or another, he emerged from wherever he was. He showed up based on the photos that he posted on Twitter. He was in a bar, and he was at a baseball game in Franklin for the Milwaukee Milkmen. So he's out and about, but Luke, were you part of the search party at all? Or,
well, I mean, I feel bad for the man. If he was homesick, I believe Milwaukee would have been the best location for him to hop on a quick flight back to Connecticut, breathe in some of that ocean air, and then come back to Milwaukee and be seen knocking on doors and going to a Milkman game potentially. That would be my guess.
And look, the one of the lines given was he had just had this, you know, bruising, exhausting primary. He gets a little time off. I agree. Take the time off. Just, you know, be upfront about it. We have this tendency lately of candidates or elected officials, you know, just flat out disappearing. And you'd think, if we learned nothing else from Mark Sanford's little foray onto the Appalachian Trail, is, you know, be a little upfront. But instead you had Montana's Republican governor a couple of weeks back after that tremendous flooding in the Yellowstone area. He was nowhere to be found for days. Went on vacation, turned out to be in Europe, but, you know, didn't tell anybody. That doesn't do anybody any favors, you know. Just let us know where you are. Yeah, and you don't have to, like, give the exact address or anything like that, but don't, when you go AWOL, you invite that sort of speculation. And next thing you know, whatever, you know, meetings you were going to go to with donors or whoever, suddenly you have to drop those and be photographed at a baseball game. And that's, again, I've said before, Tim Michaels is not exactly running the most polished campaign. There have been the flip-flops, there have been gaffes. Now he's dropping out of sight, you know, for days on end. I think we're going to see more of this. And, you know, again, it's not money enough is not going to buy you an election, a general election. It can get you a primary, But, you know, the general is a different matter. I mentioned that we're going to be talking to Dick Ostman, the Democratic candidate for Congress in the 7th District. He's running against Tom Tiffany, a Republican up here. And Tiffany has once again managed to find a way to take the position that is most hostile to American democracy. And we've talked before about Tiffany essentially disqualifying himself from office by supporting a Texas lawsuit to overturn the will of Wisconsin voters. He has voted multiple times, you know, with Putin's Russia and against, you know, America and Ukraine. Now, in the latest, he is one of only 18 Republican members of Congress who have sent a letter to Attorney General Merrick Garland demanding not just some information about the Trump search warrants, all of the information, you know, no matter what may come out, no matter how much it may harm criminal investigations that are going on. The letter to Christopher Wray, the Trump appointed director of the FBI, asks for, you know, just a few things like all documents and communication related to the execution of the search warrant, all documents and communication relating to the decision to seek a search warrant, all documents and communication relating to the use of confidential human sources. In other words, Tom Tiffany and this handful of Republican members of Congress are saying to the FBI, we want you to rat out everybody so that nothing bad happens to Donald Trump. I don't know how else to put this, except that it's something shameful, even by Tom Tiffany standards. We'll talk to the guy running against him, Dick Ostman, coming up next. You're up north. A mostly nice day across Wisconsin, but as a weak system moves through, it's once again going to have the chance of some scattered rain, maybe even a thunderstorm here or there, again, mostly to the north, but seasonal temperatures. Luke, I was reminded that I needed to be reschooled in the difference between seasonal and seasonable, and I realized I just used it wrong. So here's your pop quiz, Luke. You know the difference. No, okay,
I don't think I do. I don't think I know the difference.
I'll tell you. Seasonal would be something that's, you know, in season, like, you know, pumpkins are seasonal to Halloween, but seasonable is you're right for that particular season. So temps are seasonable throughout the year if they're in the right season. So, ladies and gentlemen, you've just had today's moment of nerdness with Pat Kreitler. Let's turn now to the elections that are just what, 83 days away now? So 84 days away. And let's join up with Dick Ostman from Lac du Flambeau, candidate for Congress in the 7th Congressional District, challenging the incumbent Republican Tom Tiffany. Dick, nice to have you here. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Pat. Appreciate the opportunity to be here.
We've already had some to say about Tom Tiffany's record, and we'll certainly be getting back into that. But as I've done with previous congressional candidates, I think the candidate, especially in these really expensive times of getting advertising out, it's tough to first introduce yourself to voters. So at least here for the nice folks listening here, they get to hear directly from you. So give folks an introduction as to, you know, who you are and what's your story.
Sure. I was born and raised in Merrill, Wisconsin. My background, when I was seven, my dad passed away. My mom had six kids. They both grew up on farms, by the way. And my dad passed away, six kids in Merrill, no insurance. My mom worked in a department store. She picked up selling Avon products. She baked bread. I delivered around the neighborhood. We got food in white boxes from the county home. She rented out my sister's bedroom to a student at the nursing college to make ends meet. She really defined who I am today, make things happen. So, you know, I was born and raised in the middle of this district. I've had a home in Lac du Flambeau for the past 25 years. This has been my home for most of my life.
And what have you done career-wise prior to deciding you wanted to make this run for Congress?
I've been a publisher for decades. Started out delivering newspapers for a struggling weekly student newspaper in Madison, Wisconsin. And that's where I got bit by the publishing bug, the media bug. 8 years later, when I left that paper, it was the 20th largest daily newspaper in the state by circulation. I then moved to Milwaukee, where I created the first alternative weekly newspaper in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Within 3 years, we won the Milwaukee Press Club Award for best feature writing in the state. My career progressed professionally. I became a leading executive in one of the largest publishing companies in the world, VNU, based out of Amsterdam. While there, my publication won 2 Jesse H. Neal Awards. They're considered the Pulitzer Prize of the business press. And, and after the pandemic, I was about to start 2 media brands of my own. I've made a lot of money for shareholders, a private owner, and I know how to do this, so I'll just make money for myself. But then I realized Tom Tiffany was going to run on hose. I said to myself, that simply can't happen. So that's why I'm here today.
The public end of it, I found to be rather fascinating, because when we think of, you know, the publishing, we think of things we would see on a newsstand every day, for those of us old enough to remember what a newsstand is. But the fact of the matter is there's entire industries devoted to publishing, you know, within industry, within the business world, things that, you know, a lot of us will never see, but the kinds of things that, like you said, are in demand, especially if they are quality publications.
Yeah, especially, you know, I was mostly involved with business-to-business information. Businesses need information on how to run their businesses, what are future trends and things like that. I published Training Magazine. It was a leading magazine in the country for how you develop your workforce. I was also publisher of Presentations Magazine. It was a leading magazine in the country as to effective communication skills and the technology that helps support that. I expanded the presentations into Russia and Japan. Russia was interesting because they spoke a little English. Japan, they didn't speak any English. I used translators to create that. And I started to joke, I'm not a funny person, but my experience in Japan, I figure, you know, once I get to Congress, I'll be able to work with Republicans, because even though we don't speak the same language, we'll be able to make things happen.
Well, it's, and I want to pick up on that, the communication skills that make for a smooth operating workforce seems rather that is the antithesis of what we have in Congress today. We have a workforce that is dysfunctional, that has poor communication skills, because I guess if we'll liken it to business, you know, the two parties are like two different, you know, departments within a company, or two different divisions that, you know, have issues of trust and, you know, mistrust and miscommunication. So you've seen from the, you know, the business world, how you go about fixing that. I have always said that, you know, politics and business are not apples to apples. So I'm asking a bit of an unfair question, but if you were going to take some of the skills you've written about and published, you know, to Congress, you know, if you were their consultant, what are some of the things you'd want to do in Congress to fix that?
You have to talk. You know, the number one, publishing presentations was one of the greatest gifts I've had in my life, because the art of effective communication, when things break down, it's typically, and this is in personal, if you think about if you have a fight with your spouse or whether it's business-wise, things break down because of lack of communication, miscommunication, no communication. And if you're not communicating, nothing's going to happen. And what's been fascinating is, you know, I put more than 14,000 miles on my truck since I started this quest in May. And as I'm meeting with people at fairs and parades and festivals and farm events, what upsets them, no matter what their political stripe, is folks don't seem to know how to compromise. They see no compromise. I mean, when I grew, you know, the politics I watched of 45, 50 years ago, you know, you compromised. Everyone gave up a little bit to move something forward for the betterment of everybody. And everybody's pretty frustrated because they're not talking, they're not compromising, they're not trying to work together. It's either it's all Republican or it's all Democrat. And if it's not, there's no meeting in the middle, there's no meeting in the middle. And that doesn't help things.
Well, especially when there's, you know, less incentive than ever to talk to one another, less incentive than ever to compromise. And, you know, my own view on that is, even before Citizens United, this was true, but more so afterwards, there is now so much financial reason to not, you know, compromise, to not communicate with each other. And I don't just mean, you know, campaign contributions. I mean, you know, the power that you get if you're rule, if you're the majority party, if you win the most elections. You know, back in the day when members of Congress were getting a, you know, a congressional salary and, you know, not much more for campaign contributions, you didn't have these multi-million dollar races. You know, you didn't have this, you know, financial incentive for gridlock. And now we do. And I'm not saying it can't be overcome. We certainly saw in the bipartisan infrastructure bill that, you know, things can happen. But Dick, if you're elected to Congress, do you feel like you can facilitate some of that despite all the big money interests that are working against good communication?
Absolutely. You know, I don't have all the answers. What I've done in life, the reason I've been successful is I've surrounded myself with people who are really good at what they do. I go out, I search for answers. I'm trying to find out what the opposite viewpoints are. When I'm at a fair, you know, I'm talking to people who have a Trump hat or Trump jacket on because I want to understand where they're coming from. You know, people would tend to call me a people person. I enjoy talking with people. Again, I'm not expecting them to tell me what I want to hear. I want to hear what they have to say. And then, you know, as a leader, you process all of that. And what I found is when you get good people in a room, the right answer typically bubbles up. If everybody has the common goal, the common good in mind, you know, sometimes it doesn't. And that's when you, as a leader, you have to step up and then you make a decision. But, you know, right now it's about politics. I mean, I think back in the Obama administration when Mitch McConnell said, I don't care what you do, I'm going to block it. I mean, Obama could have come up with a cure for cancer. And at that point, they would have said, well, no, we're not going to do it. You know, that's just it, they've forgotten that this is about the people. We are there. They go to Washington to represent the best interests of the people, not their future political careers. And unfortunately, all people think about is what's going to get me elected in the next cycle. You know, that thought's never going to cross my mind. I'll be there as long as the people want me there to be helping them. And every decision I will ever make will be what's best for the constituents of the 7th District and ultimately what's best for the interests of the citizens of the United States.
We're talking to Dick Ausmann, candidate for Congress in the 7th Congressional District all across northern Wisconsin and dipping down into some of western Wisconsin as well. It is a district. It's been redistricted, obviously, but in its previous form, it was represented by Dave Obie for, you know, more than 40 years in Congress. And it was at times a solidly blue collar Democratic area, not just from Congressman Obie, but from the legislators that represented that area as well. The pendulum swung mightily starting in 2010, and it is a, you know, right now a heavily rated Republican district. Dick, you know that. You know that when you got into the race. What is your point of view on whether that is a permanent state of redness for the 7th Congressional District and northern Wisconsin overall?
I don't think it's a permanent state at all. You have to go before David Obie. Eleni Okonski, who was a good friend of our family, he was a Republican. He represented the district for 31 years. But if you put his accomplishments, the civil rights, voting rights, introducing the GI Bill, if you had to label him, you'd label him as a Democrat. In fact, I had said something about him being a family friend. I wanted to make sure I didn't misquote. So I was looking for information on him and ran across his obituary. And in there, he's quoted as saying, well, really, I'm a Democrat domestically. I'm a Republican internationally. And then so you have Obie for 43 years. It's only been the past 12 years that what I would say this nonsense has been reigning, where, again, it's all about the politics. It's about being elected. It's about a party. It's not about what's doing best for the people. And ultimately, I think Obie and Okonski were out there doing what was best for the people.
And another one who represented that part of the state prior to Obie as well was Mel Laird, who yep. Again, you know, would be considered, if not a moderate Republican, you know, a liberal Republican, you know, something that only existed, you know, once upon a time. But again, it's that that common sense, you know, value that you have throughout the district that you feel like you can help people gain back. So you mentioned the miles you put on your truck. So I imagine even though you didn't have a primary opponent, you've hardly been running this just out of lack of Flambeau.
No, I've been all around this district so many times. There's a few counties I haven't spent as much time in, Florence Forest, but I plan to be making that up. I bought an old school bus that has a platform, and as we move forward, I'm looking forward to taking that, using it as a, I use it in parades and at festivals and such, helps with the visibility. But, you know, and you mentioned Melvin Laird, and that actually—
Let me come back to that after the break, since we're coming up against that, because I do want to ask you more about, you know, the history of this district, and it's not as right-wing as people would like to think. Dick Ausman is our guest. We'll pick up right after the break. This is Up North News.
From Lake Wissota, once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road. When along
it does feel like we've been everywhere, as those of us who campaign for office do so. And I'm talking to Dick Ausman, a candidate for Congress in the 7th Congressional District, talking to the host of a radio program who was the candidate for the 7th District in 2012. And earlier we were talking about Alvin Okonski, who represented part of the area, but as did Mel Laird. Mel Laird was represented the old 7th Congressional District. And to tell you how times have changed, Okonski represented the 10th Congressional District, something that, you know, we haven't had since 1972. And then we got rid of the 9th District some time back, again, with population shifts. So now we have 8 districts in Wisconsin. And before the break, Dick, we were talking about, you know, both Mel Laird and Alvin Okonski and, you know, the values of northern Wisconsin, which I certainly hope haven't changed too much. They're not reflected in the partisan numbers necessarily, but we'd like to think the values and the common sense are still there.
I believe it. I've been meeting with a lot of people, and I can tell you it's still there. Most folks fall to the center. You know, you have your radical left, you have your radical right, but most folks reside in the center. And, you know, historically for me, it's special because when I was in high school, I actually won the Melvin Laird Youth Leadership Award. And I went and met him in Stevens Point, along with Henry Kissinger, two very bright folks, and they really inspired me. And so, you know, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, it's Melvin Laird, it's Alvin Okonski, it's David Obey, it's decent people who are trying to help folks. And I want to join that list.
Yeah. And that's why, to that end, part of what, you know, certainly catches my attention about the more recent representation of the district is that, you know, it was clear that Sean Duffy was never interested in representing northern Wisconsin and its values. He was very much, you know, his congressional district extended to Wall Street, and whatever was good for Wall Street was, you know, good for Sean Duffy. And Tom Tiffany, you know, has rightly earned that nickname of Toxic Tom Tiffany. He is an unabashed champion of mining and of development and of other things that would really, you know, ruin a lot of what people in northern Wisconsin hold dear. But again, the political pendulum has swung the way that it has. But, you know, that's my point of view on Duffy and then on Tiffany representing it now. You know, what's your own take when you talk to people about why Tom Tiffany needs a challenger like you and needs to be replaced?
Well, it's why I got into this. When I saw his record, and I'm like, he's not helping people, he's actually hurting people. The rate of diabetes is huge in our district. He voted against lowering the cost of insulin. He's voted against funding for the infant formula crisis. He voted against the infrastructure package. Thankfully, it passed, and we're seeing our roads being rebuilt. There's 300,000 plus people added for broadband, but he voted against expanding rural broadband access in our district. He's voted against aid for Ukraine. I can tell you most Republicans I'm talking to, and in the fairs and the parades and the places I'm going, most of them are Republicans, the farm tax. They do not agree with voting against aid for Ukraine. You want to talk about a kiss for Wall Street? Tom Tiffany wants to privatize Social Security. I haven't run into a single Republican that thinks that's a good idea. It's a horrible idea. And then he just voted against the recent burn pit legislation to help our veterans. It doesn't matter what your political stripe is. Veterans are of all political stripes, and he's hurting all of them. And the list just goes on and on. I mean, he voted against the contraceptive bill. He doesn't think people should have access to contraceptives. Sometimes I'm truly left speechless.
We've talked quite a bit on this program about the speechlessness that comes when you look at this. The challenge for you and other Democratic candidates is that Tom Tiffany will not consider himself on defense on those things if on offense he is talking about, you know, freedom or, you know, the free enterprise system or, you know, God bless our military or, you know, any of these general things that strike a chord with people. But then it's up to you to do what you just did, to bring up every individual vote and show that you know, actions actually can speak louder than words. Well, they can, but you know, it's tough when somebody like Tiffany will have a lot of campaign cash to spread words that hide his actions.
Well, and so right now what I've got to do is to kick into action to raise money to spread my message on a broader basis. Because the reality, especially with having visited a lot of fairs and farm shows, I'm talking to mostly Republicans. And what I find out is they don't know his record. And when I do, I'm not exaggerating, 9 out of 10 like me, and they agree with me. I've even gotten past the topic of abortion. There was a lady, she was telling me straight out, I choose my candidates based upon their religious view. And I said, well, we're not going to agree on abortion, but I bet you don't agree with your husband on everything, but you agree with more things than you don't, so you stay together. And then we went through where I stand, what I want to do, and when I hit healthcare, I think she had almost gone in bankruptcy through that, and she goes, I like you, I'm with you. And so I went over the most contentious topic to where I actually, again, I'm not exaggerating. 9 out of 10 Republicans, once they understand his record, they don't like it.
So we've talked about voter might want to consider replacing Tiffany. What are the reasons somebody would want to support you in terms of your issues? What issues are going to be your priorities if elected?
Healthcare is number one. I believe healthcare is just like you'll have Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare. You get an education growing up. Everybody deserves everyone getting a yearly checkup. People don't go to the doctor just because they're afraid of finding out that something's wrong with them and they can't afford to fix it. You know, we need to just have them go in for an office visit. If we're treating people at the beginning and keeping them healthy, we're actually going to save a tremendous amount of and everything that's so expensive down the road. The insurance industry just sucks so much money out of the industry, and that's why you have, you know, chairpersons of companies making $100 million a year. That's your premiums. You know, the other thing is Social Security can be solved in one day. A lot of people are really nervous about Social Security. They don't need to be. Most folks do not understand that when a person makes $147,000 a year presently, they stop contributing to the Social Security fund. If you remove the cap on earnings, Social Security, and, you know, there's no reason, you know, a person makes another $100,000, they contribute $7,650 to the fund, and they get $92,350 to spend on their own. It's a good trade-off, and they can still then apply for Social Security as well. You know, wealthy folks make mistakes and end up needing money at the end as well. Gun issues, you know, I don't find disagreement. Again, this is 9 out of 10 Republicans agree with actually, I can count on my hand the number of Republicans that have disagreed with my stance on firearms. You don't need more than 5 or 6 bullets in a clip. I grew up hunting. I never took probably more than 3 or 4 shots. If you limited the amount of bullets in a clip, it would give people in these mass shootings a chance to react, do something, fight back, run away. You just don't need 50 to 100 bullets in a clip. You also need a database. When people are, you know, looking to purchase a firearm, we need to ensure that they're entitled to buy a firearm. You know, there's Republican states that have the red flag laws. If someone's been deemed a legal danger to themselves or others, you need to remove their weapon. When they're legally deemed no longer danger to themselves or others, they get it back. And then another one that was actually given to me at a farm tech event by a Republican was, I didn't realize I had to take a hunter safety course. You can go buy a firearm right now and you wouldn't know there's a safety. You don't know that you don't leave a bullet in the chamber. You don't know that you walk with the muzzle pointed down. You need to take a safety course when you purchase a firearm for the first time. And I don't find any Republicans that disagree with that. And so those things can move things along very, you know, Social Security, healthcare, the firearms, those are things that people really have on their mind besides the border and the inflation, things like that.
Yeah, I mean, if they were voting without any party label next to a name and just solely on positions, that is where the overwhelming amount of people who tend to vote Republican would actually come down. We're talking to Dick Ostman, the Democratic candidate for Congress in the 7th Congressional District. Dick, we were speaking before you joined us about a letter that Tom Tiffany co-signed about wanting to make public all of the information that led to the search warrant at Mar-a-Lago for the classified information that Donald Trump took. And of course, only a handful of Republicans signed that letter because they know how reckless and irresponsible that would be and the criminal investigations that it would jeopardize. And yet, Tiffany, like Ron Johnson, like some others who talk a good game about, you know, backing the blue and backing the badge, the tables are turned if we're talking, you know, about this kind of crime that, you know, crosses, you know, one of their own party members. Do you feel like, you know, that has any measure with folks across the 7th district that, you know, Tom Tiffany is choosing the person Donald Trump over the concept of, you know, law and order?
Well, I think, you know, the Republican Party is the party of Trump. It's not the Republican Party that I grew up in 45, 50 years ago. You know, I use an example. My dad's first cousin was Laverne Ostman. Laverne Ostman was Secretary of the Agriculture Republican. He was head of the Farm Bureau under the first Bush. Clinton kept him on because he did a great job. Two-time state Republican senator. We had a family reunion. He just passed away in December, but we had a family reunion 2 years ago. And I went up and I said, Laverne, I don't want to talk politics. But I'm curious where you sit with what's going on. He goes, all I can say is this is the first time in my life I didn't vote Republican for president. You know, again, you have what I would say are the stalwarts of the party, not even recognizing their party anymore. So, you know, I wouldn't say it's Republicans. I mean, Trump has just such this cultish figure. I mean, he's going to probably go down as the greatest con man in the history of the world. I always liken it. It's like the Music Man. Unfortunately, it doesn't have a happy ending.
Yeah.
Just have a con guy.
Dick Ostman's our guest here talking about running in northern Wisconsin and running down ballot of what are two extremely marquee races, two extremely competitive races for governor and for U.S. Senate. Talk to me about running with Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes on the ticket, running against Ron Johnson, and having Governor Tony Evers on the ballot running for a second term. Are these things that help or hurt you as you run for Congress?
I think they absolutely help. I mean, Tony Evers has done wonderful things for the state of Wisconsin. If it wasn't for his veto pen, things would not be good for folks in this state. You know, Ron Johnson, he's obviously not helping folks. He's in the same place with most positions as Tom Tiffany. The reality, though, is Tom Tiffany is many times even to the right of Johnson. I mean, Johnson at least voted to help the veterans with the burn pit legislation. You know, Tiffany voted against it. I mean, Johnson voted no the first time, then I'm sure he read the political tea leaves and changed his vote. But no, I'm excited. I mean, Mandela Barnes brings a new energy, a whole different perspective to the race. It's only positive to me. You know, I think Tony Evers will hopefully win by more than the 1.4% or whatever it was last time, which he called a landslide. But, you know, hopefully that increases a bit in the next election.
Tell me about Democratic voters across northern Wisconsin. Obviously, the Senate primary did not turn out to be too contentious. President Biden's approval ratings are heading back up in the right direction. And then, of course, you had the repeal of Roe v. Wade. Do all of these things bode well for Democratic voter turnout versus those who only vote in presidential election years and would stay home this year?
I'm a historian by loving to read about the past, but, you know, all I can say is it should help us. I know there's a lot of women out there that are upset. This is their opportunity to take destiny in their hands. I hope they come out in large numbers. And those who believe one of the things also, I missed one of the things that I want to get done in Congress. I'll give myself 10 years because the Equal Rights Amendment has to become part of our Constitution, that any woman in this country is deemed to be a lesser person than a male is unacceptable to me. You know, so it's been ratified by the 35 states. That's what the Constitution says has to happen. There's an argument over because something was added in the law as a time frame, but that's not what the Constitution says. So, you know, I think it with what happened with Roe versus Wade will only help. You know, when Democrats turn out in numbers, we tend to win. You know, and I've said this to folks in the Democratic Party. If I had my druthers, I wouldn't have a label. You know, I don't want to say I'd be a nothing. I wouldn't be a Republican. I wouldn't be an independent. I'd be a Democrat. I vote for the person who I feel is best to represent my interests. Something and I don't want to be labeled.
Something we both have heard from so many voters, because it's true. They'd like to vote for the person, not the party. Dick Ausman, this was a pleasure. Thank you, sir, very much. We appreciate the visit.
Thank you, Pat. Have a great rest of the day.
All right. You as well. Dick Ausman, candidate for Congress in the 7th Congressional District. And in our next hour, in that same general region, we are going to have Bob Look, candidate for State Senate in the 29th District. That's in our next hour. We'll wrap up this hour up next. You're up north.
News, talk, and sports on both sides of the Wisconsin River. Bull Falls Radio, 98.9 FM and WXCO, 1230 AM.
Brewers lost 4-0 to the Dodgers, and that's the kindest thing I can say about it right now. So maybe we'll chat more about the ball game later. Unfortunately, up in the 7th Congressional District at the far northern end of it, there's an additional reason why folks should consider their vote. And that is based on, you know, the condition of Lake Superior. We are fortunate enough to live to have two great lakes on our borders. And in Lake Superior, obviously the northernmost and very much the coldest of the Great Lakes, it's the one place where you would not expect to find the blue-green algae blooms that show up in warmer waters and, you know, have been showing up in some of the other Great Lakes. The algae blooms are not, you know, completely unheard of in Lake Superior, but they would come up, you know, very briefly near the shore. But in October of last year, we did a story at Up North News, upnorthnewswi.com, about how a changing climate is having an impact and bringing about more frequent algae blooms on Lake Superior and being found in new locations. And since that time, this is only a condition that has only increased. And the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel actually has had a recent story about it. This is your canary in the coal mine. These are the, you know, alarm bells that are going off, that when you get a signal from a lake as northern and as cold as Lake Superior, that tells you about the level of, you know, nutrients, what we would kindly call manure or fertilizer or, you know, other waste that ends up in there. And then what happens is the algae essentially, you know, sucks up the oxygen. It creates a dead zone below that. It can get to the point where it's actually harmful to people. It can be fatal to pets. You know, there are, you know, dogs that have jumped into waters filled with algae blooms that have died. And, you know, these are things that I think people hear at first and think, well, what are you going to do? Right. That's, you know, there's nothing you can do. And we've said before, and we're going to say again, these things are not necessarily irreversible, and it certainly doesn't mean that you shouldn't try. And even if we don't see the immediate benefits of changing what we're doing to the climate, our children or our grandchildren certainly can. And, you know, the last thing any of us should want is for our grandchildren to be cursing us long after we're gone because, you know, our selfishness, got in the way of doing the right thing, of, you know, avoiding the nutrients and the possible contamination, you know, into the bad river as it flows into Lake Superior, or, you know, the things that we do around the Twin Ports. So when you have people like President Biden, like a Democratic Congress, and now with Governor Evers, using resources to actually focus on, you know, the Great Lakes coasts, to improve the ports, Milwaukee, Green Bay, and of course, Superior and Duluth. You're doing things that, again, can't undo all the damage, but you can at least stop being part of the problem. And so we will continue to see, at least in the very near term, these things happen. The question, and it's fair to ask Republican candidates, the question is that if you're elected, if Republicans take control, will you continue this work to do less damage to the Great Lakes? Or will, you know, will the algae blooms get worse? Will the water quality get worse as the lake levels rise with more and more frequent and heavier rainfalls? Will the lakes continue to cause shoreline erosion? And will you tell us that that's just inevitable and that's just nature? Or will you understand that, you know, there's something more to it and there's something that's in our power? Ron Johnson was asked about that when he was first running for Senate in 2010. And as it turns out, it was on this day in August of 2010, as Ron Johnson was running for Senate for the first time, that he was asked about a changing climate. And his answer was, "I absolutely do not believe that, you know, the science of man-caused climate change is proven, not by any stretch of the imagination. I think it's far more likely that it's just sunspot activity or something." Ron Johnson, August 16th, 2010. Happy anniversary to that gem of Ron Johnson telling you that climate change is caused by sunspots. There's so many times where we're just silent here, Luke, because what do you say besides?
That one almost leaves you speechless because I don't know how else you respond to that. But the important thing to note, too, about the Great Lakes, Pat, is they were not as clean as they have been now, always. So, like, the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative was a super important multi-state national approach to cleaning up the Great Lakes. So we already have systems in place that could help address these problems as well if we have elected officials that admit that they are problems and want to use the resources to address them. Because we have the ability to do it. We know that we can clean up the Great Lakes. We know that we can affect change in the Great Lakes system. You just have to have the political leaders with the political will to do it.
And acknowledging that progress has indeed been made, the Clean Water Act passed in 1972. And, you know, again, I was a young person back then, but I remember how bad it was, how bad pollution was, air pollution, you know, Lake Erie catching on fire, you know, the Charles River in Boston, you know, catching on fire. Progress has been made, but only if you want to continue it. Otherwise, you end up going backwards. And that's something we may be seeing later today near the pristine but ever threatened waters of Alaska, where Sarah Palin is on the ballot and could be this close to becoming a member of Congress.
So we got Liz Cheney and Sarah Palin both on the primary ballots today.
Liz Cheney is quite likely to go down today in the Republican primary in Wyoming, and Sarah Palin has a chance of advancing in the primary in Alaska today. And what prompted me to note this was seeing a photo just now on the wires of Sarah Palin's ex-in-laws, Jim and Faye, hosting an election eve party for Palin's opponent, because that family is not exactly having the happiest of times. So we could be, I mean, just imagine a Congress that has Derek Van Orden from Wisconsin joining it, that has Sarah Palin joining it, and then has your usual cast of characters, your Tom Tiffany, Glenn Grothman, Scott Fitzgerald, you know, Jim Jordan. And then imagine that group in the majority. And again, the lack of any forward thinking progress, whether we're talking about, you know, our Great Lakes or, you know, just job and infrastructure growth. We'd be in for quite a ride, depending on how things go. This is Up North News. We'll talk to Bob Look, candidate for state Senate in the 29th District, and much more in our next hour.